back here on 96.5 The Fan. Bob Fesco, Mac Morey with you. Dusty off today, back tomorrow. And we were talking in our last segment about the single most important player for fixing the offense this year for the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll get back into that in just one second, but we got some money to give out, huh?
Yes, we do. This year we've partnered with KCUC, who's donating $50 to the Prostate Cancer Foundation. For every home run the boys in blue hit this season, one in eight men will face prostate cancer. Early detection saves lives, and at KCUC, Kansas City's largest, most experienced, and most advanced urology team, you see the best in KC schedule today at kcuc.com. Right now, $6,300 total
cool
have been raised with 126 home runs last night. Bobby Witt hit one, and Cags and Bobby had a night. They were, 6-for-9 or something like that, combined 5 RBIs, 5 runs. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, really good night last night for the boys in blue. And you said earlier that the most important person to the rebirth of the offense is Rashee Rice. Hard to argue, you know that. I'm going, though, with Kenneth Walker III, K-9, as he's called here in Kansas City. Yes. And the reason I go with him is because he really does have the ability to change the entire dynamic of this offense. And what I mean by that is actually being a person that can run the football changes the dynamic of this offense. And, you know, we've talked so much, and I'm kind of, quite honestly, Mac, getting tired of talking about how predictable that offense was last year and how bad it was last year and teams calling them out what they were going to do because they were so predictable.
Yep.
And I think that's where the Kenneth Walker thing changes just about everything for this team. No longer can they be that predictable team. No longer can they be that team where everybody just drops eight and says, screw it, we're not going to, you know, worry about the run because you're not running the football. And so I think right now Kenneth Walker to me is the most important addition to this team to take that offense to the next level, because if he's not a guy that's getting his and doing his thing, then I don't know that this offense can be successful. I'll even take it one step further. I think it's the entire running back group right now. Be honest with you, man. That running back room looks as good as it's ever have against with Andy Reid. I'm whispering because I don't want to say it out loud. But does that not look like the best running back room you've seen
100%,
under Andy Reid?
100%. 1 through 4. I mean
DeMarcado may not even make this team.
Yeah, depending on how many running backs they want to roster. DeMarcado, I think he will make the team just because of the pass pro, and we know how important that is to Andy Reid and those guys.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I want to see
Johnson. They're not taking Tyrone Tracy here, I'll tell you that.
No.
Swing and miss on a block.
No, I want to see – exactly. I want to see Breshard Smith. I want to see Emmitt Johnson out there. And then, yeah, Ken Walker, top 12 running back in this league. Yeah, this is by far the best running back group, 1 through 4, we've had. It's not. It's honestly not even close.
No, it's probably not. It's, yeah.
Yeah, different atmosphere.
Isn't it amazing how they just revamped that position,
yes,
like overnight? Just what they did 5 years ago when they revamped the offensive line, and 9 years ago when they revamped the entire defense. They do a great job at revamping positions that need to be revamped, and they did it with the running back position. It's night and day. There's nobody back other than Breshard Smith.
Other than Breshard Smith,
from last season,
who maybe should have played more. I don't know how good of a running back he is, but he's damn good receiving back. When he's get the ball in his hands, he can make men miss. He's extremely quick. I love his vision, so I'm excited to see his progression. Yeah, this revamping maybe took a second too long, a tick too long, for my liking. But again, Brett Veach went in there and did what he needed to do, and I'm really excited about this draft class and the running back room. And yeah, again, you know me, I'm the Veach criticizer usually on this show, but he's doing really well right now so far. I really like what I'm seeing out of the guys that he's brought into this team. We've got some text, Bob, on where they pee in the urinal.
Oh, yes.
As we brought up your back to the important stuff.
Yeah, the important stuff. Yeah, my shirt matches the new urinal screen.
Yes.
So I asked, do you pee against the back wall of the urinal or do you pee into the urinal screen?
Yes, and we both said back wall, lower back wall above the screen.
I like the urinals with the B that's in it because I usually aim for
the B. Okay, yeah, I'm glad we're all doing the same thing. 816 says, one of the bottom corners. I think a corner is a good call a lot of the time. Always hit the back wall from the 417. We were talking about how we also like to maybe pee a little quieter, and if you pee on the cake, on the pad, it's just kind of loud and splash. 913 says, loud and proud. Good for you. Down to the right, no splash, and it's silent. I like that. I like that.
I'm left-handed.
Forgot about that. At work, everyone aims below the urinal. Saturate the shoes, no sandals. It's just it is ridiculous the amount of pee that's not inside the urinal.
I always wonder, do you do this at your home?
No.
If you're peeing on the floor at work, are you peeing on the floor at your home?
816 says, bros, I just pee on the floor, F it. So yeah, I guess some people are. About an inch slightly above the screen. Yeah, so most people are like us. Aim for a corner, aim above the screen, that bottom side of the urinal. We also just talked about Keenan Allen signing. And you mentioned K-9. We're talking about this offense, important players that can fix this offense this year. Keenan Allen now just signed to the Colts, a one-year deal up to $8.3 or so million. Right. Dollars. I just think I'm with the Chiefs in a staying pat. That's fine. They better hope they're correct, and they better hope no one gets injured in that wide receiver room, because we're an injury away to one of those top two or three guys from having some serious scares, and then having.
But so is everybody at this point, you know. Like, I mean,
to some extent, but they don't have like that. We don't have that true number one unless Rashee Rice proves otherwise right now. So you're already working with twos and threes. If you lose one of those twos and threes, it is a bigger impact. You've got a 36-year-old tight end, and there's only so much you can do to count on Kenneth Walker and those other running backs. At some point, you are going to have to throw the ball and let 15 sling it and take it into his own hands. You lose one of those guys, it is going to be a bigger impact than maybe on some other teams. And I do not want to have to talk about in week 6, week 7, week 8, because Xavier, because Rashee, because Cyrus Allen is injured or struggling with some sort of ailment. I don't want to have to talk about
it. That's like horseradish.
I don't want to have to talk about him. I do not. Right. Please.
And he's struggling with ailments as well. I mean, it's not like this guy's healthy just sitting out there waiting for an offer from the Chiefs. I mean, the guy can't move his left leg, for God's sake. So. Yeah. You know, I want to move on from him as quickly as possible. So, yeah, the injuries are a big-time thing, and especially, you know, going into this game. I guess this is the most important preseason game. I still haven't really figured it out from the NFL coaches. For all the years with the four, the third one was always that game, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, the third one isn't going to matter. We're going out to the third game. We're having a celebration for Building Hope for Autism night and celebrating, you know, a great golf tournament put on by Mario Stone Street. Does an unbelievable job with the foundation, and so... we're going to go out and celebrate the foundation that night for the third preseason game, right? You can actually have a celebration. Nobody's going to watch the game, but you can have a celebration and have some fun with all of that for a job well done. And so I guess this is the most important preseason game. But I say I guess because since we've eliminated that fourth preseason game, how much are coaches truly putting in to the preseason? Because I'll go back to, not that this was wrong because I would have done the same thing now, but there was never a time where guys wouldn't travel to a preseason game like we saw the Rams do the other day.
Yeah,
but
no McDuffie, no Jalen Watson, for those who didn't know. They did not travel to KC.
But if I'm Sean McVay, why am I putting my players through that when you're going to Australia here pretty quick, right? The less travel, the better for the guys that kind of need to be on the field and playing. And so you take the air travel and all of that kind of stuff away, and you allow them to relax at home. I think it was the absolute right move, Mac, for these guys to make by not bringing those guys here. So that's why I question, how much do these coaches really now put into the preseason? What game truly matters? What truly matters to them? And has the second game become, for lack of a better term, the old third preseason game?
I think 100% it has. This is the dress rehearsal. When you ask, how much do they put into it? What do you mean?
You mentioned dress rehearsal. Like, how much of this is real game, right? Because you're not going to have a dress rehearsal if you're the Chiefs because your quarterback isn't playing at that, you know? So how much are you really putting into it? Is it and also, too, a dress rehearsal in week two seems early. Like, week three felt better. You had 3 weeks under your belt,
and
games and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, it's a rush. I'm not asking for more exhibition football at all. But I just wonder now, with it being three games, if you took a poll of all these coaches, how much emphasis are they truly putting on these preseason games, maybe compared to what they used to in the past?
I'd also be curious about a poll from the coaches specifically on four versus three preseason games. And now we're talking about two preseason games. I mean, eventually week one preseason is going to be your dress rehearsal, because week two is going to be your audition, which is right now what this last preseason game, the one that you're talking about going to next week, will be. That'll be the audition for the Melvin Smiths and the Godricks of the world, right? That'll be their time to really say, okay, I can make this roster. Watch me make a play. This week is the real dress rehearsal. And yes, there's going to be no Patrick Mahomes, but that's because of an injury. If he was healthy, he'd be out there. And I want Chris Jones to be out there more than one play. I want Travis Kelce to get a couple of plays with this new offense, because it is a new offense, at least from the first week and the training camp videos that we've seen. I think we've seen Andy Reid actually listen to a lot of the fans and listen to everyone around the National Football League media and say, okay, it's time to make some changes. It's time to run more under center. It's time to have true play action passes. We saw that in the first preseason game. He may be, you know, leading us astray and saying, oh, psych, week one of regular season. But right now it looks like this is a new system, a refreshed system, and it's a new team.
Yeah.
And so I want to see everyone that can play be out there. And that's especially not just the older guys, but obviously all those younger guys that haven't played too. Mansoor Delane, we need to see Peter Woods even more, in my opinion. The young guy's ability, it's all about Andy Reid changing, and so we need to see all these guys be a part of that change. And, if he doesn't change this offense, then it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, and so far, so good. But, Josh and I used to sit around and we'd talk about the preseason and be like, look, man, this is a great time where Andy can go out there and just do wild stuff and make teams prepare for stuff that they're never going to see, too. And so there's a little bit of gamesmanship that's involved in the preseason. As you're getting ready for the Denver Broncos and you're putting these three preseason games on tape, they're going to be looking at that kind of stuff, right? So maybe you're doing stuff and putting in wrinkles and doing all kinds of crazy stuff that you're never going to use just to try to convince the Denver Broncos and these other teams to prepare for stuff, because that's where the Chiefs were so good in the past, making teams prepare for stuff that they weren't ever going to see. And so, yeah, I think it probably could be the dress rehearsal, but I don't know. This is just my feeling and I have no facts or anything. Feels kind of early for a dress rehearsal when we still have about a month to go before that first game, right? And again, I'm not asking for more preseason football. I'm just having that conversation of like, because you're right. It is a dress rehearsal, but
yep.
A dress rehearsal a month before the main act is, it's kind of eerily early in my opinion.
It is.
You know?
It is early. I get it. It is just the situation that the leagues put the teams in and put us in. So this is really their only option to be able to do
correct.
This. I'll also say the kind of, camouflaging or trying to show something one thing and then do another in the regular season, all that stuff's great. The gamesmanship, I love it. We don't have that privilege anymore.
You're right. You're right.
They've lost that privilege.
Yeah.
The offense has deterred the last 3 years and eroded the last three seasons. It's time to get back on the horse and show us what you got. And that takes a new, refreshed offense. And I think Andy Reid gets that message.
Yeah, he does. No, and that's the thing, again, about Andy Reid before we get to one word. This guy does change. People look at Andy Reid and go, oh, he's never going to. Andy Reid has evolved more than any other coach I've ever been around.
That's why I'm still here.
It's exactly why. It's why I'm still here.
One word.
First name is Blake, and he goes on a cruise. He goes on a Caribbean cruise.
Katie Holmes.
No. Ah!
Are you listening?
What's your least favorite thing about working with yourself?
Body odor.
You get one word.
On the count of three, name your favorite dinosaur. One, two, three.
Velociraptor.
This is One Word on Fesco and Dusty.
One, two, three.
Oatmeal raisin.
That's right. One word on a Tuesday brought to you by Maloney, Sandtrap, and The Landing. Three great, awesome local spots. They have delicious food, they have cold drinks, and they have walls galore of TVs ready to watch your favorite sports team, all three with outdoor patio seating. And we mentioned the weather, man. It's getting better. It's getting a little nicer this morning, more fall, crisp. And so you can go out there and sit outside and watch Bobby and Cags maybe become the best sports duo in Kansas City. You can go out and watch the preseason games this weekend and go out and watch whatever else you want to go watch at Maloney's Sand Trap and Landing today at Maloney's Meatball Sub. Homemade meatballs served on a toasted hoagie with marinara and mozzarella. Your choice of fries, chips on the side, only $14. They're available every day until the end of the month. Tacos and burritos on a Tuesday, $4.50 Mexican beers and margaritas, and then $6 for a double marg. You can really get it going. You can get it going today at Maloney's.
Yeah, Maloney's nickname is actually Meatball Sub. That's what he was called in college.
I feel like that's not a lie.
No, it's not.
That's real.
Very true. Yeah, that's why it's on the menu. Yeah.
That's fantastic. All right, let's start right here on our home turf. We mentioned the Cyrus Allen play to start the show. Yesterday, he made a great sideline catch from Justin Fields. He kind of bobbled it one hand, was able to secure it, and then you saw him get 2 feet inbounds on the sideline. If you've not seen it yet, we've got all the local reporters have shared this play. Underdog NFL has shared this play. You can just look up Cyrus Allen, left-hand catch. You'll be able to see it. But yeah. One word on the play.
In, as in all in. I am all in on Cyrus Allen right now being a major impact for this team. You can't teach what he's doing. You can't teach athleticism. You can't teach, you know, the ability to go up with one hand and come down. I mean, like, you can tell them to do that kind of stuff, but to have the ability to go do that as a fifth-round draft pick, I think by the time we reach October, everybody in the NFL is talking about Cyrus Allen as the most missed-on draft pick in the entire draft.
That could be true. There's actually a couple candidates from Brett Veach's draft class earlier. I mean, Emmett Johnson might be one of
Emmett
those
Johnson's
guys, too.
Emmett Johnson's going to be in that category.
He's going to be in that category. This is looks early, but it does look like this could be a Veach master class, which is exactly what we needed to do if this dynasty was going to continue.
I'm just going to say this right now. It's looking better than the 22 class.
Yeah. Honestly, you might be right, considering, again, we haven't even seen Mansoor Delane. play yet, and that is the guy that he coveted the most, obviously, traded up for at the number six pick. If he is, I mean, if he's Pro Bowl worthy already in year one all of a sudden, and you've done what, I mean, yeah, no, this could be a Veach masterclass, and yeah. I could be eating my words for these last couple of years. How about Fandom Index, baby? Chiefs coming in at number two. They took a bunch of you know, rankings based on apparel purchases, TV viewership, radio listening, event attendance, streaming, and just overall interest level. Buffalo came in at one, KC two, Green Bay number three, Cincinnati four, Philadelphia number five. One word.
Normal. I think that's that's a good list right there.
Yeah,
like
solid.
That's one of the best lists of fandom that I've seen. Buffalo is Buffalo is just insane. They jump through fire tables.
Yeah.
I mean, tables that are on fire and all that kind of stuff. Nobody else does that. And so in Kansas City, we're number two. And that's great, man, because we're not jumping through tables on fire. If we start jumping through tables on fire, we'll probably move up to number one. But you look at Buffalo, Kansas City, and Green Bay. Those are the three best places to see a game in the NFL. Well, Buffalo's old stadium, it would have been. You know, I don't know how the new stadium is, right?
Yeah, I'm
but you
with
just,
you.
Just
I'm
think
with
of
you.
The crowds, right?
The atmosphere.
The
yep.
atmosphere.
No, I'm
what's,
with you.
What's Buffalo? Kind of like here. What's Green Bay? Kind of like here. You know, I've never been to Buffalo, but I have been to Green Bay, and obviously I've been to Arrowhead. Amazing venues. Always wanted to go to a game in that old Buffalo stadium, and I never did. I don't know that I have an interest in the new one because it's not going to have that same feel, but those fans, yeah, they're diehards up there in Buffalo. Least is New York, number 30.
Yeah, number 30. Yeah, again,
look at what number 29 is.
LA 29. You got the huge markets there at the bottom of the list, which makes sense. The only one that was really surprising is Boston at 21. That's what seemingly is a great sports town with great fans. That was the most surprising one to me.
Well, the last couple of years, you know, in Boston, you know, with New England, haven't been great. And so now they bounce back.
So Super Bowl, yeah.
Yeah, but that's just one year. The last couple of years, you know. And really, when you're starting to play good, fans don't get involved until towards the end. We're like, oh, hey, that team's doing good, you know. So, the biggest markets at the bottom, the smallest markets at the top. That's not a surprise to anybody.
Nope.
That's why I've always said, when you're talking about best sports cities, it ain't New York and Boston. It's Kansas City.
Yeah, Binkley texting, and he called me yesterday talking about Jacoby Lane. Now we've got a 913 texter talking about Jacoby Lane, a Ravens wide receiver. He says it'll be the most talked about draft pick. And you and Binkley both agree. How about this? I don't know if I agree with any of this. Mark Walter, he sold all his shares, which was the majority stake of Chelsea FC Premier League team. He's selling what was owned of the Lakers, and now he's talks about selling what he has in the Dodgers. Again, majority stake, because he's got financial problems, because he's got insurance companies down his back because of the things that he's done with the Dodgers to secure this super team and to secure this mini dynasty he's had. And then you've got the whole Buss family, erroneously, apparently, Shams reporting yesterday erroneously that Jeannie Buss and the Buss family had sold their near 18% shares in the Lakers. Jeannie saying, no, I'm not. Lawyer saying, no, she hasn't. One word on all this drama.
Wild and awesome. I mean, this family drama being played out in the media that involves professional sports. Where do I get my popcorn for this one? We all have family drama, right? Raise your hand if your family's normal. There ain't a hand going up, right?
Yeah.
A lot of our family drama don't get played out like this. They're saying the vote was 5-1 because there's 6 Buss siblings. 5 voted no. Jeannie voted to keep the team. She claims her vote supersedes the 5 because she's the governor of the team. This is wild. Also wild is that the Lakers have now sold twice in a year. This Mark Walter guy... I mean, they sold twice in a year because they're being run by a crook.
Yeah. Yeah.
This Mark Walter guy is selling everything.
And he still doesn't have enough money to cover his ass for what he's done with the Dodgers. I mean, this could be a good sign for maybe Major League Baseball. That TV deal that the Dodgers got from loopholes a few years back has really kind of been able to soar and let them coast to having this team. Maybe that'll help Major League Baseball, help decrease the lockout.
Well, here's what I'll say about that. It's going to be very interesting to watch, and I'd love to know what the players are thinking about all this too, because they're the ones that are going to have a say in how long this thing goes. But when you look at what they're doing out in LA right now, and this guy having to sell all of these teams, man, he could go up the river. I mean, I don't know, but the TV deal that the Dodgers have, let me put it in perspective for you, and this is real numbers. The Dodgers got $300 million just handed to them for their TV deal by whoever it is that's paying for this now, Sportsnet LA. Okay? Great. Good job out of you. The Royals made about 10% of that money this year on their TV deal. You know where their money came from? for their TV deal? Us buying subscriptions and them selling advertising.
Yeah.
So the Royals only get 10% of what the Dodgers get. And in order to get that 10%, the Royals have to go out there and hustle and sell and do advertising and sell streaming services. And the Dodgers just sit back and they get a check for $300 million. How does that make sense in Major League Baseball? I don't think baseball needs a salary cap or floor. I've been on the record saying that. They need all the TV money to be pooled and then divided by 30, and that will change the entire game. So instead of the Dodgers getting $300 million just handed to them with a TV contract and the Royals having to scrape and claw and fight for every freaking nickel on their TV deal, combine them all and divide by 30. And that's how you solve this inequity in Major League Baseball. It's not that hard.
Cam Newton, former NFL MVP, was at Missouri's football camp yesterday. He's been a mentor to wide receiver Caden Lee over the years. He even helped him make the decision to transfer to MU. One word. He was over there in the MU sweatshirt.
Neat.
Catching footballs, hanging out, laughing.
Yeah, it's cool to have like randos show up, right? Yeah. Like, why is that guy there, you know?
Well, and that's a guy all those 18, yeah, they probably were watching. I mean, I don't know, maybe that's more my age. Maybe
well, that's the 2014-15 Super Bowl year, right?
Yeah.
Roughly in that age range. So that's 11 years ago, let's say, 12 years ago.
So they were like 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe right before they would have really cared.
Yeah.
Maybe that's more my thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fair. Yeah. No, I mean, Cam Newton was awesome. For that one season.
Yeah, he was great. Yeah.
So good.
But people know who Cam Newton is. That's still a cool deal.
Yeah, cool. And he looks huge.
Does he really?
I mean, he's 6'5". He's still got all of his muscles. Yes, he's massive.
Cool. Can he go out there and play?
He looks like it. Yes. Maybe he's still got eligibility.
That is One Word brought to you by our good friends over at Maloney's,
yes.
The Landing, and the Sand Trap.
Yes, and today at Maloney's, get that meatball sub, homemade meatball served.
Just order the Rob today.
Order the Rob, man. Toasted hoagie, marinara, mozzarella, your choice of fries for $14. Then again, tacos, burritos, $4.50, Mexican beers and margaritas, $6 double margaritas. Make sure and get over there.
All right, coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, we're going to delete two teams forever next.
Good morning, Kansas City. It's Marcel Delane, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.